represents a large portion or segment of the area of the state. Which areas are not part of the organization or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zaroff, we represented the statewide. Now, there are some communities that choose not to join, but we are, have the mayors of the City of Barrow, the North Slope Borough, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Ketchikan, Juneau, Nenana, a lot of the smaller communities in the Bush area joined. Bethel, I believe, is in the membership now, and it's a pretty wide organization. At the present, and it's growing all the time. I think the last meeting was the largest one that in attendance that we ever had, and then the board meeting we had about a month ago was even larger than our annual meeting. So it's growing all the time. There's more interest in it.
Any further questions? I just have one of you, Mayor. You're the third mayor in a row that talked about predictability. Last year in House Finance, we put together the funding level of $71.3 million was a percentage that we put together for you. If in fact that I told you that for the next 5 years, I'd like to give you $71.3 million plus an inflation rate, would that help you? You said you want predictability, you want an amount. Would that help you?
I think that would be acceptable to my community. I'm not going to state that for the mayor's conference or the other mayors, but I think that's the type of thing that we're looking for.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and I hope you have a good flight.
Thank you.
Is there any other mayors that would like to testify and that needs to catch a flight? I would at this time ask the chief sponsor to start testifying. You may testify on House Bill 42, 152, and 153. Representative Locker, would you state your name for the record, please, and district you represent?
Barbara Locker, representative from District 16, Seat A. I would like to state for the record, Mr. Chairman, that I appreciate very much this committee and you taking these three very tough bills this early in the session. I think that they will get better, more thorough hearing than they would at the end, and I really appreciate this effort. I would also like to say that I am prime sponsor of House Bill 42, and since then there has been a committee substitute. You probably have copies of the original bill, the result of the committee's work, and the result of interested parties. From that came House Bill 42, the committee substitute. The purpose of this bill, and the only purpose, is for the legislature to set out in law how community and regional affairs will count the people of the state. We will provide the Department of Community and Regional Affairs in this bill clear and consistent guidance for determining the population of municipalities and communities throughout the state. The intent is to comply as closely as possible to the U.S. Bureau of Census Standards. I have with me here today the attorney who represented several of the municipalities in the lawsuit that the chairman mentioned. I would like him to join me here so that you can ask technical questions of him. His name is Steve Morissette from the Mapsu Borough.
At your request, Representative. Does that conclude your testimony?
That concludes my testimony. All questions should please be referred to the attorney.
Did you want to make any opening statements?
If I could, Mr. Chairman, I think it might be helpful if I at least made a brief statement of, give some background history, if the, it would be helpful to committee. First of all, my name for the record is Stephen Morissette, and I am the Matanuska Susitna Borough attorney. I am also the attorney that handled the lawsuit, which I think is was referred to by the chairman, and is the probably the prime mover in getting this bill before this committee today. In that case, I represented the Matanuska Susitna Borough, and I also had authority from the Kenai Borough, Kenai Peninsula Borough, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough to represent them as well. Anchorage was represented by a separate attorney. I would like to stress that my role is a technical one. I have been heavily involved in the history of this by going back and doing research for the lawsuit, and I've been involved in preparation of the original bill, and then in working with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and the Department of Labor in coming up with a bill that at least those departments expressed no specific objections to. Because of the political nature of the bill and the recent lawsuits, they did not take a position either in favor of or opposing the committee substitute as it now stands. What I'd like to do, with the committee's permission, is to go back and maybe hit a little bit more of the history of the population concept as it has gone in Alaska. Representative Adams has briefly outlined the previous history. I'd like to go into a little bit more detail. In the 1970s, the revenue sharing programs involved certification of populations by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. However, during the 1970s, the department did not have a demographer on staff and almost universally simply accepted the figures that the various municipalities provided. In other words, each year, each municipality receiving revenue sharing throughout the state would submit population figures, and those figures would be certified verbatim. As you can imagine, there was a certain incentive for municipalities to be as optimistic as possible in the numbers of their populations. And in 1980, I think the moment of truth came about because of three different things that happened. First of all, the 1980 decennial U.S. Census involved a count of everyone in Alaska. The second thing that caused the moment of truth is that the legislature enacted two new revenue sharing bills. One was the title 29.88 municipal assistance, and the other was 29.89 various revenue sharing programs, all of which were heavily dependent on population in deciding how to disperse money throughout the state. The third thing that happened to bring about the moment of truth in 1980 was that the state hired a demographer who had, I believe, close to 10 years worth of experience in demography and is generally recognized to be an expert and have quite a bit of experience in counting people. The 1980 census resulted in a surprise, I think, to most municipalities. I think Anchorage filed a lawsuit challenging the U.S. Census figures. Their population was reduced by approximately 25,000 people by the U.S. Census Bureau. And of course, that caused a loss to them, both of state revenue sharing in their proportion and also in federal revenue sharing, which is also dependent on population figures. What this did also was it caused the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to take another look at the process which they had been using. Previously, they had simply accepted figures. Now they came out with a set of regulations. First of all, they passed some emergency regulations, then they put permanent regulations into effect to try to deal with the state statutory language. I'd like to refer you just briefly to the statutory language. I think it's fairly clear, but obviously after my experience of this last year, it isn't quite as clear as it might have seemed. What the language in our statutes now have, and we have several statutes throughout Title 29, that have similar language, is a definition, or not a definition of population, but simply an indication that population shall be determined by the latest figures of the United States Bureau of the Census or other reliable population data. The United States Bureau of the Census figures are the primary part of that. However, it does provide that the Department of Community and Regional Affairs can develop other reliable population data. The department last year took the position that that other reliable population data allowed them to develop population standards which deviated from the U.S. Census standards. In other words, that they could count the population in a manner to distribute money throughout the state of Alaska, which would admittedly be substantially different from the methods that the U.S. Census, or methods for counting population that were followed by the U.S. Census Bureau. Going back to 1980 again, the standards that were set by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs as a result of the new legislation and as a result of the new Census Bureau was a set of regulations which basically provided the population would be defined by where someone lived more than half the year. As the chairman put it, 51% of the year, that determines where you are going to be considered a resident. The population for the year of 1980, however, was not determined by this standard because there was such an outcry from the various municipalities, I believe, that the previous method was used for the year of 1980. Even though the preliminary U.S. Census figures were out, the Department of Community and Regional Affairs simply allowed all of the municipalities once again to say how many people they thought they had in the municipality. But what the department realized at this point was that they were allowing quite a bit of double counting, because many municipalities would count a person who spent part of the year there, and the other municipality would also count that person, which meant that the total population of Alaska, if you listen to various municipalities, would be larger than the sum. For 1981, the Department of Community and Regional Affairs followed its regulations. It used the standard of 50% of the year and came up with population determinations. That population figure was initially accepted by all of the municipalities throughout the state, the Matanuskas in the borough included, Anchorage included. I think that at that time it was felt that probably was a compromise, because what we had learned from the 1980 census was that the U.S. Census Bureau used a different standard slightly than what the department had used. And the standard that was used by the U.S. Census Bureau, which dates back close to 200 years now, is the concept of usual place of residence. The question that the U.S. Census Bureau asks is initially, where does a person usually reside, and expects the person to provide a response to that. I think that process is recognized as one which gives the individual a certain amount of control over where that person thinks he lives. The U.S. Census Bureau also has a set of standards, however, which if in fact somebody falls into a particular category or does not know exactly where they live, a series of questions that are asked to that individual, which then set up the entire set of rules for counting population. For 1982, the North Slope Borough was concerned about its population, and I think that's where we get into the concept of the dispute being one between the North Slope Borough and the Rail Belt communities. The North Slope Borough had been heavily impacted because of the 1980 census, more so than the other municipalities throughout the state, because not only was it depending on the population count for revenue sharing and municipal assistance, but it was also limited in the amount of the tax by the tax cut in 29.53. And it prevailed upon the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and the Governor's Office to enact emergency regulations. The emergency regulations had three major fallacies, which was the reason that our communities filed the lawsuit. The first one of these was that it established one rule for the North Slope Borough and established another rule for everyone else. The second serious flaw that we felt existed with the emergency regulations was that in enacting the emergency regulations at the late date that they were enacted, which was in late November of last year, they actually cut residents and voters from communities throughout the state and from places where they admittedly had lived more than half the year and reallocated them to the North Slope Borough. And we felt that this was an action by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, which was very arbitrary and very prejudicial to communities throughout the rest of the state of Alaska. The third fatal flaw that we felt existed with the emergency regulations was that it used a rule which was not found in either the U.S. Census standards or even in the state regulations which had been adopted in 1980. And I can discuss that in a little bit more detail, but basically what was being counted, and I think it was at the governor's request because of a concern he had with the impact of the oil workers in the North Slope. What was being counted was what's called a de facto population, in effect a head count of the workers in the North Slope Borough, rather than a resident population, which is what the U.S. Census Bureau counts. The U.S. Census counts residents. The emergency regulations adopted by the department counted heads, counted the number of people there on a particular day or the number of people there in a particular week, regardless of whether they spent the rest of the 11 months somewhere else. The basis for this de facto count, the head count, rather than counting a resident count, was reportedly because of the impact of the oil slope workers on the North Slope Borough. And I guess I think that is something which is legitimate for the legislature to address. I do not think, however, that it's a legitimate basis for changing a population count, for changing the fundamental basis by which all of the various revenue-sharing municipal assistance money is distributed throughout the state of Alaska. And that's, I think, what happened. I think what happened because of the problem that the North Slope Borough had with its total revenue, the programs throughout the state were all affected by the policy decision that was made through the governor's office and through the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to change not the problem, or not to solve the problem, but to change the facts on which we base our revenue sharing. Therefore, the purpose of this bill is to attempt to have the legislature, which I think is the fundamental body for deciding the policy of where the money should be distributed, to decide what it means by population. If the legislature is going to enact bills distributing funds on the basis of legislation, the legislature should be the body that defines what population is for the purpose of distributing the funds. I would be happy to work with any legislative committee or any staff in trying to draft a bill that will do this. And in fact, what we have done here is work with the Community and Regional Affairs Committee to try to draft a bill that addressed all of the concerns that were raised in the hearings in front of that committee. And I can discuss those, but I think that the description that you may have in your packet more or less goes through and outlines the concerns that were raised in that committee hearing and the reasons why the bill reads as it does. And of course, what the bill is doing here is it is simply defining population to be that concept of usual residence, which the U.S. Bureau of the Census has applied for the last 200 years, and to require that the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, rather than making a policy decision as to what the population should be, to calculate the population based on what the legislature says it should be. Because there has been some confusion over what the U.S. Census standards are in relation to the North Slope Borough population. I'd like to hand out a letter which was written to the state from the United States Department of Commerce for everyone's packet, if I could.
I've got a lady to pass it up for you, Pam.
Thank you. Also in your packet, while she's passing that out, there is a copy, I believe, of a memorandum dated December 1, which has three different population figures in it. And I would like you not to look at those population figures, but to think about the problem that results when a state demographer who is, I think all parties to this situation agree, all municipalities throughout the state agree is a well-qualified demographer to count population, can come up with three different sets of population figures, all of which he says are reliable population data. And all three sets of figures are different. We have a hard enough time deciding what the population of one municipality is based on one set of standards. And when we're dealing with the problem of multiple sets of standards, we are dealing with a problem that needs legislative intervention.
Does that conclude your testimony?
That concludes my testimony.
On 42.
Yes. Except for one comment that I wanted to make, and I don't know whether the borough of Kenai has their representative here, but they asked me to pass on to you that the Kenai Borough Assembly last night passed a resolution endorsing the committee substitute for HB 42.
Okay, are there questions, Representative Martin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, one of the problems I have with the present bill and with the presentation that you gave is that I see a major conflict here. We count, it all amounts to money, right? That's no one reason we're all worried about it. Who gets the money, not necessarily the service. On one hand, we do not want the North Slope people to count the oil workers that go there and do have an impact on the community, without a doubt. On the other hand, cities like mine, we very much appreciate the military people there, and we appreciate the money they bring in, and we appreciate the services that they pay for themselves, and the federal impact monies that we received. But yet, it seems to me to be within this bill, where we're counting all military in the area, we're not necessarily being fair, because those people, according to your U.S. Census Bureau, do reside in another area and do count the residency. On our election rolls, we account 29% of the people military for redistricting purposes and stuff like that, one vote, one body. It's figured that 29% of those military people, wherever they may be in Alaska, are residents of Alaska, if they just signed up or not. So it seems to be a conflict within the proposed Health Bill 42 into how we're going to count people. In one case, for how we're going to count oil workers, and in the other case of how we do count the military people.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, can I comment? You raise a good point. The answer, I think, is that the U.S. Bureau of Census standards, which go back for a long period of time, have established a whole bunch of case law, and they've established a whole bunch of rules. And we have answers to all those questions if we follow the standards of the U.S. Census Bureau. And the answer in this particular case is that military are counted where the military location is. In other words, in Anchorage, all of those military people based in Anchorage are counted there. And that is a fundamental rule which if we follow the U.S. Census Bureau, does not get changed. The other thing I'd like to say about that is that one of the things you have to look at there when you're trying to establish policy is what the impact of that population is. And Department of Community and Regional Affairs did a study. They hired a consultant and did a study this last year prior to enacting the emergency regulation. And that impact studied, or that study in, studied the impact of various populations throughout the state. And military people living in an area have an impact.
Sure.
The study indicated that the remote site oil workers do not have an impact.
It depends on who is the recipient of the impact. North Loke people say they pay and they so many services are demanded of them in the area, in our area of Anchorage. We just love the military. We get the money and they're not really an impact. They're a tremendous boon to the economy. And I feel that, you know, we're going to deprive them of the right to vote and even be counted and represented, as this state just did in reapportionment, then we have a kind of a two-way street. We'll count you when it comes to money, but we won't count you when it comes to the right to vote. Same way you can say on North Slope people, if you want to count these oil workers up there because of 51% of the time spent up there, then they should have the right to vote up there. That's where the conflict I see. We got two different laws, and it depends if it helps us or hurts us, what we're going to go by.
Mr. Morrison.
Just a comment there. There are two different rules to some degree for voting. Voting is not necessarily a controlling factor in whether you count them for population. And under the committee substitute for the version, there was originally a reference to voting. And under the committee substitute, that reference has been removed because it does create complications. Both the Department of Labor and Community and Regional Affairs testified as to problems in mixing the two issues. The right to vote is normally determined, of course, by where someone wants to vote. In other words, if someone is an oil worker up on the North Slope Borough, or they're a military person living in Anchorage, and they want to vote, for the most part, they're allowed to vote where they want to. The question of where they're counted for revenue-sharing purposes, to some degree, has to be a decision made independent of that. But presumably, there's a desire to have that revenue-sharing count based on some concept of residence.
Of the 26,000 people military adjacent to Anchorage, and the state says we'll count 29% of them as residents of Alaska and eligible to vote, what about the other, say, 30% who want to claim Texas, Oklahoma, wherever, as their true residents? How can we then say to the federal government that our census is this, but our voting statistics is this, therefore we have a certain representation in political action, and we have more representation in the monies coming to our community from the federal government as well as from the state government? I think we got to combine the two. If you count a citizen of a certain area, he or she should have every right to vote in that area. I think we had to put the two together.
This bill, as proposed, would count people exactly according to the way the U.S. Census or the federal government counts people. It would count them according to the area in which they're found according to the federal census. What it does is it actually is a very simple bill. The way it now reads, it simply adds language. It says that population will be determined by the latest figures of the U.S. Bureau of the Census or by another method of determining the actual population based on current criteria of the U.S. Bureau of the Census. And then it defines population as being persons who usually reside within the taxing units, which is the definition found within the U.S. Bureau of Census regulations and also the definition found in the Census Act of the United States. It does not prohibit any individual from making an appropriate legal selection as to where that person wishes to vote.
Further questions, Representative Martin?
Yes, I've got a couple questions for you. It was in 1981 that CRA promulgated regulations and asked the questions. 51% do they spend your time living in? Would you go along with that question?
I think that that question at the time was recognized as a compromise by both NAFSU and Anchorage as being a policy carried out by the Community and Regional Affairs Department, which would come reasonably close to the U.S. Census standards. The problem that I'd simply like to lay out to the committee with that is that when you decide to deviate from the U.S. Census standards, you're embarking on a new path. You're embarking on a path that conceivably can have abuses by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. And I think that's what happened in this case. And the reason that we are proposing this particular language is because it follows a set of standards, which we've got all that 200 years worth of history that we can use to figure out what it means. And then I think that what we need to do is decide if, in fact, a count of the population doesn't adequately address the needs of many of our communities, for instance, those communities that have a higher cost of living, then the way to deal with it is to adjust our formulas accordingly. And I think our borough, as well as I think the other parties in this case, would support that kind of concept. We support the idea of having the political process and the needs of the various communities be the determining factor for how much money people get. And as Representative Martin pointed out, money is the bottom issue here. But what we'd like to see is we'd like to see the concept of population depoliticized. We'd like to see a certain set of rules that everybody can look at and everybody can know what it is and say, this is what the population is, here is what we need based on our population.
In your testimony, didn't you just say that this problem needs to be addressed by this particular bill earlier?
No, it needs to be addressed by the legislature.
By the legislature.
Correct.
Then let me state to you, didn't the legislature address this last year? It passed the House, it passed the Senate. The legislature did address this in a form of a bill, Senate Bill 180, and it went up to the governor, but the whole bill was vetoed, not because of the population count, but perhaps it was the forest tax amendment that got added on to this particular Title 29. And we addressed this problem last year, and then we got the regulations by CRA, you know, put out regulations. Wouldn't you say that this particular problem has already been addressed by the legislature?
If that bill had remained in effect, we would have a bill or a statute which more directly addressed this problem. Mr. Chairman, as you're aware, even I think the proponents of that particular amendment to Title 29 are aware that there were certain problems with the way that bill was formulated last year. They were trying to accomplish an answer to a certain problem, which was, admittedly, the problem of the loss of revenues to the North Slope Borough. And they did that by redefining population. I agree. That was an effort by the legislature to define population in a way that it could reasonably be understood. But it suffered from the same flaw that I'm concerned can happen again, which is that once you embark on a new course of definition that doesn't have the history, you are going to run into other problems because we can't all think of all the problems that can come up with something new. And we'll have to go through a process, a time where we work out the problems with any new formula that we develop for counting population.
You heard earlier testimony from a mayor earlier. He was referring to perhaps a Senate bill, but it's which removes the tax cap for oil taxation purposes in the North Slope Borough. What is your position on that, if we remove the tax cap?
From a technician's point of view, which is where I'm from, I think that's exactly the way that should be handled. Okay, from the position of the Matsu Borough, I think that they probably, and I can't speak for certain, but I think you can probably speak for them. They probably would have a concern about the fact that the tax cap is simply being removed.
The last thing I have, isn't it nice that the people in your particular borough
has jobs up there so they can pay the property tax and pay for some of the businesses in your area. Isn't it nice to have jobs up North Slope?
Yes, but...
That's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Isn't it nice that the North Slope has the oil that belongs to all of Alaska?
But, Mr. Chairman, let me point out that the issue which we're concerned about, which is the revenue sharing and the municipal assistance, is crucial to our borough, which does not have an industrial base. In other words, we depend for a substantial portion of our funds for operating government services on municipal assistance and revenue sharing programs based on population alone. We have no other source of income.
Any further questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Did you want to testify at this time
on
your two other bills?
152 and 153. I would just again say that I can't say any better than the mayors that said it before me how important what appears to be just a few thousand dollars in some small communities' budgets are to them. And I know that coming together before you, it's $28 million and it's a sizable sum of the revenues, but please give it your careful consideration, and I appreciate your time.
I've got a question of you, Representative Locker. There was an earlier statement by all three mayors on predictability of the amount of money on a year-to-year basis. What is your feelings if the House Finance come up with a formula that perhaps, like I said earlier, $71 million last year and add inflation on it for the next 5 years?
What I would say, Chairman Adams, is that I could not speak to the $71 million plus inflation. I can certainly speak to the stable figure, whatever that would be, and hope that it would be as close to the 1982 figure as possible. But whatever it was, just knowing that it would always be there, not always, I guess you could only guarantee that for 2 years. However, the fact that it was your intent that it be stable would be something that we could live with.
Thank you. Is there any questions of Representative Locker on either 42, 152, 153, Representative Flood and Fettesworth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Locker, HB 152, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, reduced the face amount of that appropriation from 3.5 to 2.9 and change. Can you give me an explanation of why that occurred and why that happened?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that figure was the final figure that Community and Regional Affairs said was needed to fully fund that. And the first figure we had been given was the 3 point something, but as it got close to the final passage of that bill out of committee, they actually went back and counted the nickels and pennies and gave us that figure, and we certainly didn't want to ask for more than what was due the communities.
Thank you very much. No further questions, sir.
Representative Bettisworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow through on the chairman's question, are you aware of any legislation that is recommended by the Municipal League to combine the two municipal revenue sharings, and is there a bill coming through the process to do that?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I understand that the governor considers that a priority and will introduce it. And that's why Community and Regional Affairs has not done anything. We are waiting for him to introduce it, just like we did the rewrite of Title 29. We were warned ahead of time that he would be introducing the bill, and he has, House Bill 172.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lockard, in your committee you have House Bill 227, which is introduced by the rules at request of the governor. which I believe addresses House Bill 153 and 152, Sections 1 and 2 of this. He, of course, uses different figures than the two bills that are under consideration today. Have you looked at that and found out what the governor's justification was for those figures?
I can only say that that bill is in our committee, and I know that it has asked for a reduction. I can only tell you that the figures that we have brought to you are the very best figures brought to us by the mayor and the municipalities as to what they consider due them, promised, if you will, by the previous legislature, and a supplemental funding. And it's not unusual, I don't believe, for the new governor to disagree with people on figures. He does it quite regularly. And he also changes his mind quite regularly, and I'm hoping that with a due pass from this committee, he will probably come out behind that new figure and act like he thought it up himself. Thank you. I have another committee meeting. I appreciate your time. As soon as you have...
Yes, Representative Lindauer has my last question of you.
I have a last question. Representative Locker, are you aware that the circumstances that will occur if you agree to a permanent or a fixed figure for a number of years, if you represent a community that's growing rapidly, whereas other communities are not growing rapidly, that your proportional share of the revenue sharing will decline over that period of time?
Okay, I can only assume, knowing what I do about the funding, that Chairman Adams said a fixed figure with built-in inflation. How much my community then gets is determined by population of that figure. And yes, I do realize that if this figure is fixed and only inflation increases it, that would be something we'd have to live with. But I can tell you that since I've been here, I have not seen anybody running to the goal line with help for the communities. And I would see this as a start, just having some stable place and stable amount.
Thank you very much.
I have one.
One more?
I may.
One short one.
Yes. Why was the provision on voter registration deleted?
The provision on voter registration? Because even though the sponsor of the bill would have preferred to use voter registration as criteria, or at least part of it, we again had to agree with the people that worked on the new bill that we really should not want to ever deviate from what is the proven practice of counting people for many, many years. And even though I had originally thought that was the best way, I had to agree with the Department of Labor, the Regional Affairs, and the other interested parties. That is one thing. Our data should always be credible, and we shouldn't mess with it for anything. And so that's how I felt. And I would also like to say to this group, for those of you who were not aware of Senate Bill 168 funds, the municipalities did not have the freedom to lower taxes with that money. It was stipulated that that money would be used for social services and capital improvement projects for municipalities that had a lot of other social services. They then could pay for them with Senate Bill 168 funds and that way lower taxes. For other communities that do not have health powers, we were forced to use the money. We were happy to use it, but would have been happier to be able to save it so that what now we could be using some of the interest and maybe not be here year after year. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Locker, for your testimony. We'll see you in caucus. The next one to testify is Susan Burke. Susan, we're testifying on House Bill 42.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Could you state your name and position for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Susan Burke. I'm a partner in the law firm of Gross and Burke here in Juneau in private practice. And our law firm represented the North Slope Borough in the population determined litigation that Mr. Morissette talked to you about earlier and that Chairman Adams also mentioned. And I'm here at the invitation of Chairman Adams because having gone through that litigation, I learned a great deal about counting people, various ways of counting people, and also some of the policy issues. Lawsuits, like anything else, aren't completely divorced from policy. And some of those questions did come up in the litigation. And I think it might be helpful to share with the committee, as I testify, some of those policy issues, at least the ones affecting the North Slope Borough, that were discussed and raised in the litigation. And also to talk a little bit about the Community and Regional Affairs substitute for House Bill 42 and the reasons why I think it may not completely address the problem. Reference has been made, of course, to the bill that Senator Ferguson has introduced, having to do with removing the entirely the limitation on a municipality's ability to raise operating revenues through taxing oil and gas pipeline and other oil and gas property. Certainly that's the most direct approach, and that's one that would solve the North Slope Borough's primary problem, which is not so much with the revenue sharing formulas and allocations, but with the limitation on raising operating revenues and the limitation on the oil and gas tax. And as I'm sure you're aware, the formulas for determining population under the revenue sharing statute and under the oil and gas cap are virtually identical. And the oil and gas cap was first enacted, of course, in 1973 during the second special session of the legislature dealing with oil and gas legislation. The 1980 revenue sharing bills, the so-called new revenue sharing bills, really didn't change the property determination formulas for revenue sharing that had been on the books, one since 1960. Signal to it that it should change its rules for counting population. I'm not sure, but that's past history, and you've heard the history of how we got to where we are already, and although I would disagree with one or two minor things Mr. Morris had said, it's not important and it's not worth quibbling about. There is a real problem in the North Slope Borough, and I appreciate the fact that Mr. Morissette acknowledged the fact that there is an impact with the oil workers, and it's a very peculiar problem once you get backed up into population counting methods. The U.S. Census Bureau, of course, counts people for demographic reasons. It wants to know how many people there are, for starters. But beyond that, it wants to know what states they live in, how many people live in rural areas, or how many people live in urban areas, how old everybody is, what the mean age is. And seems to me that when the census taker talked to me, the census taker wanted to know how much money I made and all of those sorts of things. It's very interesting information, and it means something to the federal government, and they base all sorts of decisions on the information. It may or may not, however, be suitable for the legislature's purposes in allocating state revenue sharing money, or from the North Slope Borough's point of view, determining how much the North Slope is going to be able to raise in operating revenues through taxation of the oil and gas properties. With respect to problems with the state demographer and so forth, certainly one of his primary duties, as I understand it, is to work as the state's liaison with the U.S. Census Bureau and to feed them the numbers that he comes up with through census and updating and so forth. And for those purposes, the numbers that he sends to the U.S. Census Bureau have to conform to their standards so that the information that they get around the country is uniform and tells them what they need to know. But the difficulty is that demographic techniques for purposes of painting a demographic picture don't address a very unique and particular problem with respect to the North Slope Borough and these workers who are there year-round. The camps are like little cities in a way, and in some ways not unlike the military reservations. There are people there. But the reason that the demographic techniques don't work and usual residence doesn't work is that you have a fairly constant population of people living in these camps requiring municipal services, and the North Slope Borough, despite what anybody says and despite what any of these studies say, they do provide services to these camps, and there is a fiscal impact there. But in any event, instead of having this little city where people live there year-round and their heart is there and they say, oh yes, I live at Pump Station 10 and that's my home, you have people rotating in and out of these camps. Excuse me. John Smith stays there for 2 months working. He leaves and goes on R&R, perhaps never to return to Pump Station 10, or Pump Station 1, I guess, if we're talking about the North Slope Borough. Joe Smith comes to take his place. So you have a person there occupying a position, occupying a bed year-round, requiring municipal services, but it's not the same individual all year-round. The census is counting individuals, individual human beings. Representative Adams, where he lives, and Representative Lindauer, where he lives, and people's families and wives and children as individuals. And it's important then where those people usually reside and so forth for demographic purposes. But it doesn't tell you how many people are in these camps on a year-round basis in the North Slope Borough causing impact. Now, I'm assuming that because the these workers were counted ever since they've been there in any significant number by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, both for revenue-sharing purposes and for the tax cap, consistently up until 1981 when the department changed its rules, that the legislature, at least the previous legislature, somehow acquiesced in this. They must have known about it because they got reports on all of this year after year and appropriated revenue sharing on the basis of this. But that doesn't really answer the problem here. The problem has arisen. It's once again before the legislature for the second time in 2 years. And I am increasingly convinced that it probably is best handled by a legislative solution rather than leaving it to the broad discretion of an executive department. And I think there's agreement on that. But there may be some disagreement as to the extent to which the legislature should itself set down the rules and the extent to which it should simply defer to whatever rules the United States Census Bureau wants to come up with or may change from year to year. I'd like to talk a little bit about what I see are some problems, at least from the North Slope Borough's point of view, with the Community and Regional Affairs Committee substitute as it's drafted. And once again, I'm assuming that this is the only vehicle that will ever be before the legislature, because I can't certainly make an assumption as to what action is going to be taken on Senator Ferguson's bill. So I'm going to assume that this is the North Slope Borough's only chance to solve the problem, and doing so through the population technique. I've already talked a bit about usual residents and why that doesn't address the specific and unique problem in the North Slope Borough with the oil workers there on a year-round basis, very few of whom, understandably enough, would claim it a pipeline camp as their usual residence, and why that doesn't address the real problem with the North Slope Borough. It's as if you're counting apples and oranges, and if you only count apples, it doesn't take care of the oranges, and that's the problem in the North Slope Borough. The second thing is that, I think I can understand why this wasn't included in the bill, but it doesn't address the statute where the primary impact and problem is for the North Slope Borough, and that is the 2953-045-050 oil and gas property tax. If this bill were to pass, it might very well solve, it would, not in a way that would particularly please the North Slope Borough, but it would at least solve to some extent the revenue sharing problem. but the Department of Community and Regional Affairs would be at sea still when it comes to dealing with population determinations under the tax cap, would have a statute that's now different from every other population determination statute, assuming a bill like this were to pass. And I think it makes sense, since there, you know, is there's always uncertainty about any legislation until it gets passed and the governor signs it. I think the legislature should address the tax cap problem, and I think it makes some sense to at least consider if the legislature's not going to consider addressing the tax limitation problem in a more frontal way, that it should address it in the population determination language. I have prepared proposed amendments to...
Before you start on that, I've asked you to come up with a compromise amendment, hopefully that all the municipalities, and I would like to pass it out, then you can go through it. But it's not my intention at this time to take any action on the amendment. The reason is I'd like to be fair and give the amendment out to municipalities so they'll have a chance to respond to it when I bring this up. I am definitely going to put this bill into a subcommittee. But before we get that, I'd like this amendment passed out and also to members from any municipality here as the attorney. Representative Martin?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Well, that's being done. Mr. Burke, one of the fundamentals I've had since last year on this problem is that the basic concept we're seeing in democracy, taxation without representation. And I'm very concerned about that, either whether a community is receiving taxes or paying taxes or federal level, state level, whatever. And it seems to me that one of the basic ways that a person shows that he is a citizen of an X community is that they live there, and number two, they are a registered voter there, but they don't have to register their freedom. How can we count someone, whether it be military, whether it be a worker, or whatever, a resident of a community when he has shown that he's a, let's take the military, I'm going to get away from North Slope right now. Evidently, we count military 100% in our areas and get the financial benefits thereof. But that individual is from Texas or from Maryland or wherever. He or she pays taxes there. They vote there. And that's the real count. Does Maryland count them? And we count them too for our purposes in Anchorage. On the other hand, the North Slope, these people work there, they raise money, and they cost money to the people up there. But they don't have the right to vote either. They have the right to vote in Anchorage or Fairbanks, wherever they're coming from. And, you know, it just seems to me that it should be part of the formula. We know not only physically where the individual says he or she lives, but where they declare themselves to be for tax purposes.
You want to respond?
Chairman, just very briefly. I think that when you're talking about taxation without representation, you're talking about imposing a tax on someone who doesn't have any representative who will speak for him or her in the body that imposes the tax. I think it's important to keep in mind when we're talking about this population determination problem for revenue sharing or for this tax limitation and so forth, what the purposes are. And I, you know, in both instances, they're somewhat similar. There are, you know, people who are there on a year-round basis cause impacts on the communities. The military, for all the economic benefit, I assume that the municipality of Anchorage provides some services and is required to do so because of the presence of the military there in the North Starborough as well. And that's certainly true with respect to these oil workers and the North Slope Borough. I mean, it's the purposes are different. And in my view, I don't think that the purposes for counting people for demographic reasons is necessarily the same as the purposes that you want people counted for these various programs.
I'd like to, at this time, is take up the discuss the amendment that you have before you there. Could you explain it to the committee, please, and then
yes.
I can go through questions on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The primary difference between this proposed amendment and the Community and Regional Affairs Committee substitute is, first of all, in Section 1, I would propose no change in subsection A for the reasons that I've described before. I think that the there's no question that defining population and so forth is a controversial issue and it's a tough question. But I'm not sure that I'm very comfortable leaving that decision entirely in the hands of the United States Census Bureau, over whom the legislature has no control. So I would propose leaving that language exactly the way it is. Subsection B of 2988.015, in this draft, we have not altered the concept of the general concept of counting people where they usually reside. However, we have added something that specifically addresses the problem of the workers at these isolated work sites in the North Slope Borough. It's very similar, in fact, to the approach that was taken by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs this past November in the emergency regulation. And I want to hasten to add that in the court decision, although the court found that there was not sufficient basis for the finding of emergency, the court did not say that the department could not apply its own rule to count these workers. The court recognized that there was a unique problem in the North Slope Borough. And what we have done here would be to, in addition to counting all of the usual residents under, if you wanted the majority of the year rule, that would be fine. In addition to that, the average number over the course of the year of persons who temporarily reside in an isolated work site within a municipality, and this would apply to the Kenai Borough for that matter, although in the litigation it came out that most people who work on the Cook Inlet platforms live in the Kenai Borough anyway, so the issue doesn't come up as to which municipality gets to count them. But in any event, it would apply to any isolated work site. In the draft, I have tried to distinguish between year-round presence and simply a summer fish camp or something like that where you have an influx of workers temporarily or tourists or that sort of thing, because I think those may raise problems, but I think they're different problems from having a year-round population. And the way I have addressed that particular question here is in terms of variance. In other words, as long as there's someone there, there's a number of workers there every month, and the lowest month from the average doesn't vary any more than 50%. That way it ensures that there's one lonely worker left there to as a security guard for 7 months out of the year, and it would distinguish it from that situation. I've also provided that you would determine the average number of persons in these work camps during the year at the time of the census, and you would conduct a census, and on census day, which, because of the way all of the revenue sharing and the taxation things work, and the period of time that the certifications have to be done, would more likely than not be July 1st. You would ask the workers whether they spent four nights per week that the week of the census, which is a technique that has been used in the past by the U.S. Census Bureau. You could adjust for seasonal fluctuations by reference to Department of Labor statistics that would show you fluctuations and so forth. And that's essentially the concept that we would propose. And as I say, it's quite similar to the emergency regulate the technique that an approach that was taken in the emergency regulation. Section 1 would amend the population determination statute in 2988 revenue sharing, also 2989 the miscellaneous aid to municipalities. Most significantly, it would also amend the oil and gas property tax limitation statutes in sections 4 and 5 of the draft that has been handed out to you. And last but not least, section 6, providing that the act would take effect July 1, 1983.
Is there questions?
Yes, Representative Martin.
Just one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Burke, on page 2 of the proposed amendment, in about the middle of the paragraph, we're taking the person head count of where they reside normally, plus that community also gets to count them where they work at, even part-time.
Yeah.
So why we may end up with a tremendous population, at least by 1.5 times.
Oh, I don't think it would be that much. There aren't that many workers up there, for starters. And let me say a couple of things about double counting. For demographic purposes, and as I understand it, for the purposes of the state demographer's job in sending figures to the U.S. Census Bureau, double counting to them is a terrible, terrible thing. Understandably so for those purposes. This is a tough problem, and you've got competing interests from all of the municipalities that are affected. The North Slope Borough, who wants to count these people, and the other municipalities, where granted, a lot of these people would qualify under a usual residence concept. For purposes of the revenue sharing and the tax cap property or population formulation, I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with double counting, and it may be one way of at least trying to solve the equitable problem of plucking these people out of the Matsu Borough or the Fairbanks Borough or the municipality of Anchorage and putting them in the North Slope Borough. You're trying to mix two different concepts here. And it seems to me that a limited amount of double counting is not only tolerable, it may in fact be the best way to try to accommodate some of these equities. Now, I think that the way I have drafted this, and I've not had an opportunity to discuss it with the state demographer, but I think it would work. The usual residence concept would count just about everybody. Mm-hmm. At the time you asked the temporary workers, where do you, were you here four nights a week, they would also be asked the usual residence question. So you would be able to have their usual residence for purposes of sending the numbers to the U.S. Census Bureau and having, you know, those standards reflected in the, quote, official population of the state for demographic purposes. And I'm going back to my apples and oranges example. You'd count up all your apples, then you'd add up the oranges, put them in, add them to the North Slope Borough's population. You tell the U.S. Census Bureau only about your apples, and you'd keep your compilation of your oranges within the state and use it for your own purposes, which in this case is to address a specific problem in the North Slope that these demographic techniques simply don't address and don't solve.
Well, instead of double counting, why don't we half count?
Well, I suppose you could apportion them. I hadn't even thought about that.
Well, I'm looking who's paying the bill. The state's paying the bill each way, so put it.
That'll be discussed in the subcommittee. Representative Bessinger.
Mrs. Burke, you talked earlier about, if I understand your reasoning for the North Slope Borough wanting to be able to count is for purposes of all the services that are provided to these occupants, and I think you used the example or these employees at pump station number one, correct? I think you used that example before. Can you give me an idea of what basic services are provided by the borough that are not provided in the normal course by the owner, operator, employers of these individuals? I'd like to know how extensive the services actually are.
During the litigation, Mayor Eugene Brower prepared an affidavit because we anticipated that perhaps these questions would come up. And he prepared an affidavit, and it was filed in the litigation. And he indicated in that affidavit as follows. The North Slope Borough provides the following services to employees and other residents located within the Prudhoe Bay Dead Horse area. Drinking water, sewage treatment, solid waste disposal through incineration, solid waste landfill, sludge treatment and disposal, police protection, search and rescue services, land use zoning and regulation, environmental inspection and protection, and administrative, finance, legal, and other general administrative support that go along with the services that I just mentioned.
Do you have any, it's awful hard to get a fiscal note on this. Can you translate any of this into dollars?
I don't, the affidavit does not address that directly, no. And I can't tell you precisely. It's very difficult, you know, to allocate those kinds of things anyway to a particular area. I don't know whether the borough could actually do that. But, I mean, I suppose any person in any area, you know, in any municipality might say, they're spending municipal money for this and I'm not getting my fair share. So I don't know what...
Do you think your double counting procedure is any more... rational as far as the court would be concerned with in the emergency regulation that was struck down because no reliable data was used?
Yeah, maybe I should explain what it was the court objected to in terms of a lack of rational basis. First of all, I'll just briefly run through the decision. It won't take me very long. First of all, the court invalidated the emergency regulation on the basis that the court did not think there was a valid emergency, quite apart from the substance of it. Court went on to say that the department has considerable discretion under the statutes to make population determinations and to develop methods for counting people. So the court then looked at, and even under existing regulations, the court then looked at the particular methods that the department used, the methodology that the department used to apply the substance of the emergency regulation to make the 1982 population determination figures. And of course, the North Slope Borough's population was the only one that anyone was challenging or attacking in the litigation. So the court looked at how the department went about coming up with the number for the North Slope Borough population that it did. And there were a couple of areas. Of course, no one went up to the North Slope Borough between November and December and asked the four-night-a-week rule question to anybody. So what the department did was to do some averaging. And the court took issue with, you know, because there wasn't any sort of even sampling database for finding out how many people who are up there would say yes to the fortnight per week question. The court said you don't have any, there's no rational basis for picking a low number for your average or a high number for your average. And it was the methodology primarily.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, could I just ask one more question?
Sure.
Have you analyzed your proposed amendment from the standpoint of its constitutionality? It seems like that if the North Slope and, say, Mat-Su is going to get a count the same man, that we would have problems with other boroughs coming in under arguments under the 14th Amendment, a lack of equal treatment Have you analyzed this from a constitutional standpoint? It seems to me to be a pragmatic but novel approach.
I haven't thought deeply about the constitutional questions, but I will give you the benefit of my not-so-deep thoughts as I sit here. It seems I'm not certain that a municipality would even have standing to assert an equal protection claim against the state. I mean, they are creatures of the state, and there's certainly some U.S. Supreme Court authority for the proposition that the state can do anything it wants to with them. But quite apart from that, let's assume for a moment that a municipality would have standing to assert an equal protection claim. We're not talking about fundamental rights or anything like that, so, you know, a court would look at it under the so-called rational basis test. Now, our state Supreme Court keeps saying that it applies a stricter test, but I can't tell the difference, to tell you the truth. So let's assume that it's a rational basis test. And I think this is a rational way. I mean, there is a problem. Municipalities have competing concerns here, and it seems to me that this is a rational way of trying to come to some reasonable compromise of those competing concerns and equities. So I think it's rational. Therefore, I think it's constitutional.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned several services that evidently are provided by the North Slope Borough. And, of course, we're talking about state dollars. We're talking about the revenues that are going to be going into the municipality. Does the company or camp have contracts for services with the North Slope Borough? In other words, are there differences made up by the fact that the camp may contract to take care of incineration, any contracts of that nature? So
I'm not absolutely certain. I don't think so. Some of the utility services there are charges for, although my understanding is on the basis of the affidavit, and maybe I should just make copies of the affidavit available to the committee. I don't know a lot about the day-to-day business of the borough fiscal there, but in any event, there have been shortfalls, and it doesn't pay for itself, at least to the extent that we're talking about utilities that can be. Police protection, is not a utility that kind of service that you could charge.
I know that some of these contracts that are made with the municipality for service oftentimes are very, very lucrative and meant to be so, and I was just wondering if those type of things did exist. We're talking about police protection, of course. We're all aware that those camps have security guards and that sort of thing, but you're talking about area-wide. I imagine they might come up with a contract for fire service, but I'm sure that the camp would also have service in that area.
I don't think that the services that I mentioned are dealt with under contract. I might be wrong, but I don't believe they are. I mean, just judging from what is in the affidavit, and as I say, I can certainly... I mean,
Chairman, if I may, I know that last year, or maybe it was the year before, in discussions, the borough was seeking a contract or trying to insist that they take care of incineration of the camp's material, even though the camp did have facilities to handle that. And I guess it was resolved in the or goodwill on the part of the company and the borough that to allow them to do that. I just want to make sure that we're not talking about contracts of which the borough would be benefiting, and then at the same time coming in with monies per capita, which this fee or charge might have already been put out through a contract.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rusendorf, I don't know for certain the answer to your question. I don't think so, but...
Mr. Chairman.
But it didn't come up in the litigation, therefore I didn't explore it further, yeah.
Further questions? Representative Pessinger?
Well, just finally, Susan, I can be very wrong. I sense this amendment is suspect to litigation of a suit against the North Slope Borough under an equal protection argument. If we look at these contracts, we look at these benefits, we measure out this compensation versus what other boroughs are and are not receiving. Maybe I'm wrong. I would ask, and you're an excellent lawyer, I would ask that you just keep this in the back of your mind and think about it, and perhaps when we have an opportunity to confer, you would confer with me further on this point. I would be interested in your mm-hmm. opinion.
Yeah, one other, Mr. Chairman, if I might, one other line of cases involving equal protection that may have some impact on this question are the cases where taxpayers have filed suit against the taxing authority, complaining that, you know, we pay 50% of the tax and get 2% of the service and so forth. And the U.S. Supreme Court, at least, has turned entirely a deaf ear on those sorts of arguments. I mean, governments are not expected to provide back services dollar for dollar for every dollar they take from a taxpayer on an individual basis. And just those kinds, that line of authority too makes me think that this kind of approach, you know, I suppose in some senses the North Slope Borough might complain on equal protection grounds about the tax limitation.
No further questions? Thank you, Ms. Burke, very much.
Chairman, thank you very much.
The next one to testify on 42 is Marilyn Dimmick with Kenai Peninsula Borough. State your name and position for the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Marilyn Dimmick. I'm testifying as an assembly member on the Kenai Peninsula Borough. I also represent the administration on this testimony and also the Alaska Municipal League's Legislative Committee. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon. Since the hour's getting late, I'll try to be as brief as possible. I'd like to testify on all three of the bills that are before you this afternoon. And I should mention, reiterate, that the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly at its regular meeting last night did pass a motion supporting passage of all three of the bills, which is consistent with our early request for legislative appropriations to fully fund municipal assistance and revenue sharing with the supplemental bills. I will start with House Bill 42, and as you know, the Kenai Peninsula Borough was one of the parties involved in the lawsuit that was recently took place. The Kenai Peninsula Borough has in the past on more than one occasion conducted its own census using and paying for it and using federal Census Bureau guidelines. This past year, prior to July of 82, we conducted a census and have received the verification of the totals that the borough came up with, which was 32,303 people and 13,019 households. In 78, the borough conducted its own census. At least one city, the city of Soldotna, within the last few years, I believe it was 76, conducted its own census. So we are accustomed to using the federal guidelines and regulations, and that is one reason for our support of this bill, as well as the same sort of testimony you heard from other municipal representatives. I'm sorry I can't speak to the presentation that was just made, since I've just seen it, and so I won't. I hope you won't ask me any questions about that. On the other two bills, I'd like to speak to them together to save time. The Kenai Peninsula Borough is very large. It's also very rapidly growing. It also has very limited powers, and that presents certain problems. Our primary responsibility is still the building and maintaining and operation of our schools, as well as things like solid waste, which cost us more to manage because we must use the Public Utilities Commission hauler for our solid waste. We are very often restrained from doing what would be less expensive and more practical because of our limitations, both imposed on us by the state and imposed on us by the fact that we have not accepted, gone to the ballot and been able to accept more powers. So that the municipal assistance and revenue sharing monies the last two fiscal years, have been very important to us. We have actually, in fiscal year 1981, received $1,782,916 in municipal assistance, and we used $1,710 for tax relief. We did this by maintaining the same mill levy. We did not change or lower the mill levy. We gave a 30% effective mill rate, a tax credit. We also gave credit where it was due to the legislature who gave us the money. In fiscal year 1982, we received $3,143,310 in municipal assistance. We used $3,096,510 for tax relief, almost the entire amount in both of those fiscal years. So that while our mill levy remained 2.5, the effective mill rate was lowered to 1.25, which was a 50% tax credit. If that leads you to think that we don't really need the funds, I should also mention that because of our size and our population distribution, we've had over the years to create a number of service areas. We, of course, have to keep our general government mill levy as low as possible because we can't pass those savings on to the service areas. And in many cases, their service area is higher than the general government service area. So it's extremely important to us, even though we do maintain as much fiscal stability as possible and do pass on that tax cut, it's important to us to receive those funds to keep from having to raise the taxes and perhaps the mill levy. Just in conclusion, I would say that we do try to be as frugal as possible, and that's one reason why I'm the only representative here today speaking on four bills for the Kenai Peninsula Borough Administration, the School District Administration, and the Borough Assembly, and I thank you for listening.
Ms. Dimmick, the gas platforms, that are they all in or out of your borough?
For purposes of assessment, they are considered personal property, and so they are taxed at the same low rate that other businesses' personal property is taxed.
In the borough?
Yes, sir.
And you count the number of workers on those platforms?
Yes, we do. As was pointed out earlier, most of the workers on the platforms do reside in the borough. However, there are a larger and growing number of people who live in the borough who also work out of the borough on the north slope or along the pipeline.
But you still count those people from Anchorage that go down to Kenai on the platforms, you still count them as part of your population?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. What type of service do you provide for those people that's on a platform that lives in Anchorage?
If primarily emergency services. The Nikiski Fire Department provides and is constantly upgrading its services, and those people are extraordinarily well-trained, as well-trained in most cases as the people on the platforms themselves. And they would, in any emergency that requires it, work together. There are agreements with the oil companies and the Nikiski Fire Department for those specific needs. I think we're very responsive, actually. And I'm intimately connected to someone who works on one of those platforms who is extremely safety conscious. And when I say we don't need any more money for that fire department, he says, oh, yes, we do. And this is exactly why. So it is a service that we do provide.
Question, Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said there was an agreement with the fire department. Of course, it's with the blessings of the local governing body and the...
These are informal, sir.
Are we talking in terms of contracting again for services, or
no?
Or a cooperative where they would assist you with whatever they had, or not?
I think it's a cooperative and an informal type of thing. It is not something where we are paid by them for a service. It's strictly cooperative. I don't believe in many cases that there is anything down on paper.
What do you get in return then if it's a cooperative?
There are many instances in the area, both on the land and in the inlet, where people need rescue services. Quite often, I would say almost always, the facilities provided by the oil companies are used, helicopters and so forth. Quite often that's done, and there's no charge unless there is a specific need for that, a specific agreement in some instance. But very often I think it's just a matter of cooperation. Everyone is very, very safety conscious in the industry, and the residents are as well. And so it has been so far a happy relationship.
When you're swapping roughly equal services for equal services, I'm permitted with several contracts of a smaller fire department with a larger one, that the smaller one would agree if necessary to come into that, you know, fire service area, and the larger one vice versa should they need. And this works out roughly the same way, and there's no interchanging of funds like there sometimes is, let's say, with the national government sometimes will contract with the state government to provide certain services. And it's also, I believe, happening.